So I'm in a new position for me. My background briefly, I taught in universities for about 19 years. I spent about 2.5 years in the private sector working with a group of engineers that were mostly dealing with water, and moved myself and then eventually my family to Albuquerque, New Mexico. And then my engineering firm decided they really didn't want any soil scientists working with them anymore. So I started casting around for some things and found this position at the Soil Science Society, Agronomy Society, as an education director, manager. So that fits in my background. I have all this material in my background. I've been working, I knew Ted and Kevin because we were on the Council of Soil Science Examiners together. So I had some experience on both sides of the fence, and it gives me an opportunity to come in as the, a long title. They even changed the title for me because I have the soil science background. They added that to the, I don't know if that adds that to the responsibilities or just to the title, but so that's who I am and what I'm doing here. There we go. Yeah, so I'm a certified professional soil scientist, and I had a young man. I've been standing around our K-12 booth there in across in the Society Center when I have a few moments free. And there was a young man, undergraduate in North Dakota, and he walked up. I don't have CPSS or anything on my tag, and we were there. And he said, "Oh, what do you think the value of certification is in the university system?" Now, Ted and Kevin have heard me preach on this before, so had a long discussion with him about why is that important. The societies offer certifications, the CPSS, Certified Professional Soil Scientist. It provides an external body that has granted that I have the credentials to state that I'm a soil scientist, that I have the credentials to practice as a soil scientist. It lends some credibility to that, and it also provides some protection for the person who's hiring me. I was in one professional expert witness case, and the guy on the other side who was claiming to be a soil physicist was a retired physicist from Los Alamos Labs who had read a soil physics book. So he was an expert. He had no idea what he was talking about. Missed all sorts of things. But he talked about sodium adsorption ratio. He talked about wilting point. He talked about electrical conductivity. He missed everything. He didn't understand the system. He didn't understand the soil. So we have a certification program to help protect, demonstrate that we have credentials and credibility, but also to protect people who hire somebody that may not really live up to what their claim is. The societies also have a certification for certified crop advisors and certified professional agronomists. Now, how many of you in this room are certified? All right, we have some of you who are not, so I'm preaching to you now. This is how you become certified. What does it require? Actually, I needed to go back and add two more slides, but I can say that easily from here. So if you're going to be a soil scientist, what does that mean? Well, in your undergraduate or graduate education, you need to have 15 semester credit hours that are soils classes. At least 9 of those need to be upper division. At least two of those need to have a field or lab component. So these professional core requirements include coursework in genesis, morphology, classification, chemistry and mineralogy, fertility and nutrient management, physics, biology and soil ecology, and soils and land use management. So you've got those 6 categories, and you've got to have at least 15 hours selected from those 6 categories. That's the professional core requirement for the soil scientist. There's also supporting core requirements. That's another 45 semester credit hours, at least 15 in upper division, and at least 4 of these 8 hours where you have at least 5 hours. So usually for many of these, that's 2 courses in each of these. So agricultural sciences, that's my background where I came into soil science from that direction. biological and ecological sciences, chemistry. I took a lot of chemistry on two different degrees. Mathematics, I took a lot of math too. Physics, I took a fair amount of physics. And statistics, I even used to have to teach statistics. Communications, that's probably the weakest point in my education. I didn't really have that much in terms of communication. Geosciences, human health and land use, technology and engineering, and water sciences. So you come up, you need at least 45 semester credit hours from these supporting areas to add on to that. Now then, the slides that I didn't include here, so we'll talk about that for a minute. Once you've got these, you fill out an application, you submit your credentials, and you have to take two exams. If you're still in grad school, undergrad, take the first exam when you graduate. It's the general knowledge exam. So if you've had soils classes, you finish before all that stuff starts to flush out and be overcome with other things, take the exam. The longer you wait, the more challenging it is to remember that stuff. Then, once you've applied for that, you've submitted your credentials, there's a period, they'll look at that. You need some experience. And so if you don't have the experience yet, it's 3 years if you have a PhD, 5 years if you have a master's. You're a brand new graduate. You've just taken the exam. You don't have that 3 years. You don't have that 5 years. So in the last 5 years or so, we developed a category for that waiting process. You pass the first exam, and you've submitted your credentials. You're in that process of getting your experience. You can be an associate professional soil scientist as you're gathering your experience. Once you've got that 3 or 5 years experience, then the second exam comes along. And this one's a professional practice exam. It's scenario based. So the first one is general knowledge. The second one is scenario based. So you're given a scenario, a what if, and you're given all the, it's like those word problems that people really hate and the problems that my students really didn't like, because they were complex. They required you to think through things, to sort out and figure out what is the important information here and what's just extra. Which of these sciences really do I need to bring to bear on this topic? And then once you've kind of worked through all that, it integrates your soil knowledge, checks you have to do some critical thinking and you have to do some problem solving. And so that's the nature of the professional practice exam. And it gives you some options. You may not be really great at soil chemistry and there's a soil chemistry question on there. Well, you've got an option. You can pick, isn't it 6 of our 8 or is it 4 of our 8?
Five of 8.
So we've got 8 areas and you have to answer 5 of those scenarios. So you don't have to be an expert in everything. You can make a selection there. And then once you pass that exam and all your credentials are met, then you become a certified professional soil scientist. Which brings me to why I am here, to talk to you more about this continuing education, because all of our certification programs, as all certification programs do, they require you to stay current. So you have to keep getting information, keep learning, be a lifetime learner in order to stay current in your field. And so I want to know how to help you. And so the way this works within the certified crop advisors, they need 40 in 2 years. I've got a mistype I see here. The certified professional agronomists, those have a higher degree of education. They have to have 50 every 2 years. Theirs are specified. You have to have them in nutrient management, crop management, pest management, and soil and water management. Now, if you look at those and you're a certified professional soil scientist, you see that there's already some overlap because it's two of those categories line up with the work that we do, depending on which direction we're working. But there are nutrient management things that, if you're a soil scientist, that might fit some of your continuing education materials. Soil and water management, that encompasses a lot of things. Some of those might meet your, help you meet your certified continuing ed units. You're required at this point to have 40 CEUs every 2 years, and at least one of those must be in ethics. I want to make sure that when you're doing business, that you're doing it honestly and ethically. And there's a lot of things that are good, but they're not ethical. And that seems a strange statement to make, but there's things that you can do. They're good things, but they didn't quite meet the does it smell right test. And so, what do we offer at this moment? The societies offer a fundamentals exam for helping you prepare for that first exam, the basics. Then within that 12-week course, we've taken it, separated it out by 3-week units for each of these subcategories. That was one of the suggestions that I made is when I came on, 8 months ago? Yeah, 8 months ago now. I said, you know, not everybody needs a 12-week course. Maybe they're only weak in soil biology and ecology. Why don't you make it where they can purchase just that 3-week component, and you don't have to sit through the whole thing if you know all that, feel confident in all that other material. So we've split that out. Now you can purchase one of these categories, each of these categories as you need it. And that would help you prepare for the exam. Also, if you're already certified, but you'd like to go back and review something, this gives you some material that you could use to review and get CEUs. At this point, the primary focus of the society on delivering continuing ed units is through webinars. It needs to be distance because everybody's not going to go to Madison for a class. I don't really like to go to Madison in the winter. And at this point, they're letting me work remotely, so I'm living in Albuquerque in much better weather than Madison. Also, they've got those large things that you can climb and walk around on that really, really make the background of the landscape a lot nicer to look at. Although my wife likes the greenery that you kind of miss in Albuquerque. But we've got a variety of topics offered through webinars. Most of the soils topics that we have at this moment and most of the topics that are available right now focus on agronomy. There's a couple that don't. One of them is, well, not entirely two. There's one of them that's the intersections of water quality and agronomy. So they're trying to draw in the agronomy people and talk to them about why something like Ohio and 500,000 citizens being without water for a couple of weeks. There's another one that was about fracking, and that was a webinar series. So we've started wandering into some other areas, but and the other thing is some written. They have a Crops and Soils magazine, or if you've got a journal, you can do some self-study and take credit for that. However, I come with this broad background. I've got some consulting, I've got some education in agriculture, soils, agronomy. I had to take economics classes. I took some climatology classes. I had a really bizarre PhD because I tried to be as broad as I could. I wanted to think with a much wider scope and be able to understand things from a larger perspective. And so I didn't focus in on the little super tiny thing where you know more and more and more about less and less and less till ultimately you know everything about nothing. That was not the process direction that I chose. So when I came and I looked at the materials that we have at the societies, my first thing is we need to broaden our topics. We don't have a lot available for somebody who's a certified professional soil scientist that reaches out and meets you where you're working. We need to broaden our regions, even in the stuff that they've done for the Certified Crop Advisor program. Nearly everything, 80% plus, is focused on the Midwest, the Corn Belt. Most of my career has been spent in places that have a lot less rainfall. I spent most of my career in the Texas Panhandle. I'm a native of that region. The only time that I spent in a place that has a precipitation that approximates the evaporative demand was when I did my 4 years in Iowa for my PhD. The rest of my time, I've been in dry places, or at least drier places. So I look at this material, and you know, at the office, they really want to make this stuff cash flow. So the societies are looking at education as a potential cash cow for themselves. I'm not sure how that's going to work, but they want to make, they want this as a potential income source, a revenue source. I look at it and I look at the regions and I say, you know, you don't have anything for the Western Great Plains in agronomy. You don't have anything for the Southeast in agronomy. You don't have anything for Texas. You don't have anything for California. And they say, well, those people don't take our courses. That was my comeback. Like, well, you know, if you offer them something, they begin to realize that you offer materials that are valuable to them, that are not just about corn and beans, you'll draw them in. And it's going to take a little while. But if you don't offer anything, then they're not going to be interested in your materials. So broaden our region. So I'm trying to draw people in from across the U.S. now. Broaden our topics, even in agriculture, but especially when it comes to soil science. It's dismal out there right now. If you look at our pages, and I've got some stuff here, we don't have a lot of material that would talk to you where you're working unless you're working in agriculture and in agronomy specifically. Audiences. We're looking for non-traditional audiences. I am anyway. If they really want this stuff to bring in revenue, we need to look outside the walls of our society. We need to look outside the walls of our certified professional soil scientists and certified crop advisors. And so one of the big growth audiences out there, and I think some certified professional soil scientists certainly have an opportunity, is in urban agriculture. Those folks don't have a clue what soil is. They don't know what they're managing, and they need help. These people that are building really cool green things up on top of buildings, that's beautiful. But a lot of times the stuff drowns because they don't know how to build it well and then not overwater it. So urban audiences, regulators, you know, there's legislators, we have a lot of audiences that would benefit from our knowledge, which brings me to our obstacles. I need to know from you what's useful for you. I can't deliver information to you if I don't know what you need. So that's my first thing. What's going to help you in your career and in your profession? The second one, I can say, okay, these audiences need to hear our information, but how do we find them? And even more challenging, how do we target them? So they did a fracking seminar and they thought webinar series. I thought, man, this is a popular topic. It's going to be important. And they have maybe 30 to 50 people that sign up for it. They really need about 100 even as the break-even point. So how do we get the information out there to the people that need to know that we're offering educational materials? I was at and I know this is one of the big areas for soil scientists working, particularly in the eastern half of the United States. You build a house out in the middle of nowhere and you need an on-site wastewater treatment system. In Texas, unfortunately, if you're a backhoe operator, you can go to a four-hour training and you can get a permit or be trained to issue a permit to put in your wastewater treatment, you know, your septic tank and stuff. And it's a one price deal. You give them the permit, you dig it, you put it, gone. How many of those things are failing? A lot. And so we know, you know, that's just one example. And there are examples everywhere. Every time we CPS folks get together, we commiserate a little bit about all the people that are doing soil science work that don't have the background to do soil science work. They're making interpretations and they don't have the background. So we need to figure out how to reach that audience. Some of them realize they don't have the background. There was a conference on on-site wastewater treatment in Albuquerque right after I started. So I went to the conference and we had some people that were, you know, small regional county this and county that, because they know they don't understand what they're doing. And yet somebody, county commissioner's court said, okay, you're responsible for doing all the permits on these. And yet when they came to that conference, it was a bunch of scientists talking to each other. At least the first day. The second day was a little more polite. But it was being delivered far beyond their understanding and ability to comprehend what was happening. So we need topics. We need to know who our audience is. We need to know how to target that audience so that what we're delivering is something that's useful to them and valuable. And then the societies want to make money from it, or at least they don't want to lose money from it. So this is not my forte. You have to talk to Luther about that. But this is the pressure that we have. I want you to develop a class that people are going to want to take. And if you can't do that, then develop a class where we can get sponsors to pay for the cost of developing it. So now it's up to you. What do you need to know